The following program is a production of Beach Booster Radio. Beach Corner with Diana Chicky is sponsored by Exchanging Vows Bridal Boutique in Collingwood, Ontario. Visit exchangingvowsbridalboutique.com for all your wedding and formal wear needs.
Hi, I'm Rick Emmett from Triumph and the new Resolution 9, and you're listening to Beach Booster Radio.
I'm Diana Chicky with Beach Corner on BeachBoosterRadio.com, your backstage pass for all your entertainment. Rick Emmett and Resolution 9 released their new album, Res 9, on November the 11th. The Resolution 9 band consists of Dave Dunlop on guitar, Steve Skinley on bass and keyboards, and Paul DeLong on drums. Dunlop and Skinley also co-produced Res 9 with Rick. Recently, Rick reunited at Metalworks Studios in Mississauga with his Triumph bandmates, Mike Levine and Gil Moore, owner of the studio, to record Res 9. This is the first new music from the original lineup since 1987, Surveillance. Also featured are guest artists Alex Lifeson from Rush and James LaBrie from Dream Theater. I met up with Canadian Rock and Juno Hall of Famer Rick Emmett at Metalworks Studios to discuss his new album Res 9 and the meaning behind the band's name Resolution 9. Don't go away, we'll be right back with Rick Emmett. You're listening to Beach Corner, brought to you by Exchanging Vows Bridal Boutique in Collingwood on Beach Booster Radio. Wasaga Beach's only truly local radio.
Hi, I'm Andrew McNeil, Director of Economic Development and Tourism of Wasaga Beach, and you're listening to Beach Booster Radio.
Welcome back to Beach Corner on BeachBoosterRadio.com. Joining me at Metalworks Studios in Mississauga is Canadian Rock and Juno Hall of Famer Rick Emmett from Triumph and now with Resolution 9. So welcome to Beach Corner, Rick.
Thank you very much.
So Triumph enjoyed a 15-year lifespan followed by a break which led to the reunion in 2008 at a festival in Sweden. Recently, you reunited at Metalworks Studios to record Resolution 9. This is the first new music from the original lineup since 1987's Surveillance. So how did you enjoy the experience of working together and being back at Metalworks Studios?
Well, it was heavy for me, for sure. I mean, I hadn't been here since 88 to make records. And when I called up Gil and said, you know, hey, I've got this deal and I'm thinking of coming and recording again and I'd like to just come there and do bed track. He said, oh, yeah, no, you got to treat this like your home away from home. Like, you know, you belong here. This is what you should do. And I said, yeah, okay. You know, so I got a flood in my home studio basement where I was going to have pre-production rehearsals with the guys. So then I had to phone Gil again and say, you know, I was coming in for bed tracking. Can I come in there to rehearse maybe too? And he said, yeah, sure. So we were here in Studio 6 for rehearsals and pre-production. And then we were here for bed tracking. And it went so well that then I said, yeah, you know, I don't see any reason why we would go someplace else. Maybe we should do overdubbing. I mean, so this room that you and I are sitting in here in Studio 2, we started doing overdubs here. So I sang all the vocals here and did the guitars and stuff. And then it was like, well, why would I go anyplace else to mix? So in the end, we did everything here.
He did everything.
And he was a real sweetheart. He really, you know, was welcoming and it felt comfortable. And it was like full circle for me. You know, you mentioned in the intro about the reunion in Sweden. I think for Gil, it felt like the band had come full circle when it got together and played together on stage again. But for me, the heart of the band was really the building of this studio in 1980, the making of the Allied Forces album here. So for me, it was like to have something where Mike and Gil and I would play together on a track. That was going to kind of complete the circle. So that was a sweet thing about the Res 9 album.
So your album, Resolution 9, you mentioned how it represents a journey through your life. What is it that you're trying to convey through your songs?
Well, I mean, part of it is that as a songwriter, you're letting the songs lead you. Those are the things that, in the way a novelist would write a story and say, well, I developed this character, and then this character started talking to me and telling me what the character should do. Songs have that way, too, of leading you to, you know, what they want to become. So that's a part of the process. But, of course, it's pretty hard to extract yourself entirely. Your ego is still in there. Your whatever you've known, whatever you've learned, whatever you're exposed to, that becomes a part of it. And I didn't think I was ever going to make another rock record in my life, but along came this opportunity. And so I'm making this rock record, and then you're thinking, why? Why am I doing this? Like, I don't need it. You know, it wasn't necessarily even something that I wanted, you know. But along comes the opportunity, and then, you know, the guys in my band are whispering, you know, oh, hey, Rick, you know, maybe we should produce. This would be really good. And because I still go out and play summer touring shows, you know, outdoor festival things, and it's usually the Triumph greatest hits thing. But fresh new music would be fun and challenging, and those guys would like to be a part of it. And so they have their own agenda. Everybody's got their own agenda. So anyhow, I start thinking about what it is that I'm going to do. And when you strap on an electric guitar and turn the amp up to 11 and away you go again, you're really going back to who you were when you were 11 years old and 12 years old and 15 years old and 18 years old. And then I joined Triumph, and I'm 23 now, and now we're making records. And so that was a long time ago. That's ancient history. But you're tapping back into that ancient history. So that's the past. And now here you are recording in the present. And part of songwriting, part of being an artist is, who do I want to be? Like, what kind of a human being? Like, if I'm starting the chapter that's sort of the rest of my life, how do I project that in this work that I'm doing? And music has that quality that it's always going to be a part of who you were, who you are, and who you want to be. Right? So that's a sort of an interesting challenge. And I went, I'm 62 years old. I'll give that a kick. I'll try that.
So what is the meaning of your album title, Resolution 9? Because I know there's a meaning behind it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, my initials are R-E. And so we, as a, first of all, I should say this. I didn't want this just to be a Rick Emmett record or a solo artist who was then getting sidemen to do what my bidding, you know. Like, it was more like I wanted to have the guys from my touring band become a much more integral part of what the record was going to be. And Dave and Steve were going to produce it. So it's Dave Dunlop on guitar and Steve Skingley on bass. But they're both far more adept at this whole thing. You know, they know their way around this gear better than I do. So that was going to be a big part of it. So I said, it can't just be Rick Emmett. The band's got to have a name. So we looked at R-E names, words that started with R-E to start. And Revolution, Resolution, those seem pretty good. But Dave's got this weird thing with the number 9. He played in a band called Full 9 before he played with me. And he's got a tat on his arm that's the Chinese character 9. He has a studio that's called Room 9. And 9, if you check it out, like the numerology and stuff about the number 9, there's a lot of stuff, you know. Not the least of which is that cats have 9 lives, and here's this old rock cat that's, you know, taking another kick at the can. So I go, okay, the Resolution 9 is that we'll put a band together and make a record.
The new album has been released on November the 11th. Also featured as guest artists are Alex Lifeson from Rush and James LaBrie from Dream Theater. This is quite the lineup. So how did this collaboration come together?
It started with this guy in Pittsburgh named Jim Patulski, who's the A&R man for Mascot. And Jim said, we'd love you to make this record. You know, we'd love to give you enough resources that you can make whatever good record you want. How about guests? Do you think guests would be a good idea? And I went, yeah, sure. And he said, how about like Canadian guests, so that it has a kind of a Canadian kind of thing to it? And Mascot, they're out of Rotterdam, so they're actually European based. Jim's out of in Pittsburgh, so he's, you know, North American. He was a big fan of Triumph back in the day, so he's got this thing about Canadian rock, and so does Ed Van Ziel, who's the president of Mascot. So it was like, Canadian artists, okay, so who is it going to be? And he goes, you know the guys in Rush. I go, yeah, I know the guys in Rush. So Alex will probably answer my email. Yes, I'll ask him, you know. And Alex was, you know, sweet. Like, he's a great guy. He's funny. He's a gentleman. And he said, no, that'll be fun. I can't wait. Yes, I'm in. The LaBrie thing, I didn't know James, but Podolsky knew him because he used to manage Dream Theater. So that was the connectivity there. And before you knew it, James was saying, oh, yeah, I'd be honored. It'll be great. And so, May 16th was one of the best days of my life. May 16, 2016, we were back in Studio 6. Alex Lifeson on guitars in the morning playing on my stuff. And then James LaBrie of Dream Theater in the afternoon singing. And it was like, and with the photo shoot in between. So, pretty good day for me.
How cool.
Yeah.
So, how different is Resolution 9 from what you have recorded?
I would say that it made a pretty quantum leap in terms of the quality, the digital quality of it. Although we tracked drums analog, I would say Dave and Steve's contribution was major on that level. It would never be as good a record quality-wise if it was just me in church. I would like to think that the arrangements for things were, you know, again, very band-oriented, so I think the arrangements are stronger than if it had just been me. I don't know. I mean, the records that I've made in the past, I was a younger man wearing a younger man's clothes. And, you know, so now the record was made when I was 62. I've had a birthday since, so I'm a 63-year-old guy. I think I'd like to think that there's a sort of maturity and a wisdom that maybe didn't exist in other stuff. But there's a summation to it, too. I wasn't sure that this wouldn't be the last record that I'd make, you know, certainly rock record. So I wanted to make sure that it had a summative kind of concluding set of values to it. Which is not to say that, you know, I'm not going to be like The Who and say, oh, this is it, I'm retiring. Like, and then, oh, 5 years from now, I'll do another retirement thing, and then 5 years from now, I'll do another. But I do think that I felt like I was definitely coming to the end of a chapter of my life and starting another one. And so far, the reaction that I'm getting to the album, people are picking up on that. They go, oh, this is brilliant. It really has a kind of a depth, a substance to it that, you know, that we didn't expect. So that's a nice thing.
So tell us about the meaning of one of your songs, in particular, Human Race.
Well, you know, that's an autobiographical thing of why do I keep doing this? You know, why do I keep chasing the things that I can't catch? And because that's the joy of, I mean, you know, that it's an old cliche, really, that it's not the destination, it's the journey, you know. But certainly when it comes to music, I've always felt that you're always sort of just in this moment of chasing something that you can never really catch. Music is very ephemeral, you know, it floats in the air and it'll fill the space between us. You know, it gets inside our heads. It makes us think things and feel things. But there's, you know, it just exists floating in the air, really. You know, so you can't really ever catch it. You can only kind of make it in the moment. And, yeah, so that's Human Race.
That's Human Race. So where do you draw your inspirations when writing songs, having said that?
Oh, they come from lots of different places. I mean, sometimes I'm inspired by other music, other art, books I read, things I see in movies, on television, things that I read in the newspaper that get my blood boiling, and then I, you know, I get into my notebook and start making a few, you know, a rhyming couplet or just anything. You know, I tend to be a magpie, you know, like some shiny object that attracts my attention and I take it back to my nest. And, you know, I tell my songwriting students that I think of it as the acorn theory. You know, you find these little things and they can turn into giant oak trees, you know, like The song is waiting in that little seed of an idea, and you get a sense of it. You know that it's there. It's just going to take a lot of work and a lot of time. But that's my acorn theory, you know. And the acorns can come from anywhere. You know, a snatch of conversation that you hear over here, or I don't know, you know, sometimes just a sunset, or, you know, I don't know. Yeah.
And how do you stay motivated over the years? What keeps you going?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, some days it's harder to get the engine going than others. I don't know. I mean, I think that when I was a younger man, my ego and my ambition were a large part of the fuel. And that's really something that's changed now. Like, I don't feel like I have to accomplish something for the sake of my own ego or for the sake of ambition. I do think that I have a certain duty to my talent, to my gift. So that could sound egotistical. I don't mean it that way. But I have to sort of try and take care of myself and to be able to function at a certain level. And that gets harder the older I get. You know, a little bit of arthritis in a few of the joints here and there. And, you know, so, and making music is a very physical thing. I don't have the range that I used to have vocally, you know. So those kinds of things play into it, that you're in a game against time, you're in a game against your own body, and you're in a game against your own ego. But how much of it is about sort of the glory of the music itself, you know, and the glory of the art and the craft? And I feel like that's what I still kind of chase. That's still the thing that kind of I go, okay, no, that matters, you know. I should get myself going for that.
So let's take a short break, and Rick, if you could please introduce one of your new songs from Resolution 9.
Hi, this is Rick Emmett of Triumph and the new Resolution 9, and I'd like you to hear my new song, Human Race.
Joining me today is Rick Emmett from Resolution 9. You're listening to Beach Corner on BeachBoosterRadio.com.
Wild cat.
Welcome back to Beach Corner on BeachBoosterRadio.com with my guest, Rick Emmett. Rick, how's the tour going? Because I know you've been touring since this album has come out.
I tour all the time, Diane. I never stop. Like, it's the never-ending tour. But it's not really like a tour in the way that your listeners might imagine. Like, I tour like a traveling salesman tours. So some weekends I go out and I'm gone for 2 or 3 days. Sometimes it's as many as 4, never more than that. And then I come back home and I'm home for a week or two, and then back out I go again. So it doesn't burn me out, and it doesn't destroy my throat. You know, I manage to be able to sort of handle it. But it's been going all right, to answer your question. I haven't been touring on the album so much as just touring and play. I have a show that's coming up at the Living Arts Center in Mississauga on November 26th. And that's really kind of like the canary down the coal mine for me, like for the band, for the new stuff. We're going to add a lot of the new songs into the set for that. And so that'll be interesting. And of course, we got photographers coming out, and there'll be YouTube cameras going. And, you know, so that will be then, it'll become part of promoting the record. And as we get into 2017, then of course I'll be, you know, my foot will be firmly on the backside of my agents saying, come on, you got to find us Resolution 9 gigs. We got to get out there and we got to do this. But I will still try to hold to the thing of out for a weekend, back for a few, out for maybe 2 weekends tops, and then back for a little rest.
For your concert in Mississauga on November 26th, are you planning any special guests?
No. Okay. No, I think that'll be pretty straightforward. I asked Gil at one point, and he said no. And I'm pretty sure Lifeson, whenever you ask Alex anything like that, usually the answer is, well, I'm going to be out of the country. You know, like, that's his standard. Oh, no, I'll be out of the country. I'm going to be on my Greek island. I think he does actually have some place on a Greek island. I'm not making that up. But, yeah, no, I don't think so. We're going to just see if we can't handle that one on our own. Yeah.
So can we anticipate any music videos in the near future with this new release?
Well, they've done 3 lyric videos that are on YouTube. So Human Race has got one. I Sing, which is the one that had James LaBrie sharing the vocals with me. And then End of the Line, which had both Alex and James on it. So that's all the guest stuff, you know, out of the way. And they did that all as pre-release kind of stuff. At this point, there's a little part of me, I would love to make a little video, like just a little modest one for Sweet Tooth, which is kind of the novelty song on the record, but it's the double entendre one about candy and sex, and so I kind of feel like that would be fun. The two songs that I feel are the deepest songs on the record for me are My Cathedral and Ghost of Shadowtown. And if the record company doesn't want to further exploit those on some level, then I think I might do it on my own, because I don't want those songs to get lost in the shuffle.
You also did an instrumental, Grand Parade.
Yeah, although it ended up with a vocal on it. It started life as an instrumental, and that's the one that has Mike and Gil on it, where I had this instrumental thing, and it was kind of a jazzy, it had a vibe that was, you know, that kind of post-midnight kind of melancholy kind of jazzy mood. And I said to those guys, this is reminiscent a little bit of the Suitcase Blues song that had been on the Just a Game album in 79, which those guys had been kind enough to include. Gil and Mike had, they would indulge me. You know, there would be times where we were short of material for albums, and they would say, well, Rick, you know, you want to do a classical guitar piece? You want to do a weird little jazz song? Like, we need stuff to fill out the album. And they would let me get away with that. And Suitcase was really kind of one of the ones where that started, where the tangents that I went on musically were, they weren't Triumph anymore. It was something else, but they were allowing me to do it, which was sweet of them. So this one, Grand Parade, I thought if I wrote a lyric for this and turned it into a tune, maybe I could get those guys to play on it. And they agreed that they would. And Mike, you know, sat here in the studio and played the bass. I think Gil had his drums out Studio 2 here and spent a Sunday afternoon, you know, doing his thing. So, yeah, kind of sweet, kind of nice. And so that turned into a vocal track. But it's got that post-midnight melancholy kind of thing. Here's a true story about the guys in Triumph. We always get together around Christmas, and we go out for a dinner together at a restaurant and hoist a few and start telling old stories, and the stories start to get the edges buffed off them, and they start to turn into myth, you know, the fables that we... Yeah, so, and that's the friendship that we have, and it's a sweet thing, it's a lovely thing, and, you know, for a long time there, we didn't have it, you know, when I left in 88... You know, it wasn't so nice for a long time, but we fixed it, you know, and that's a sweet thing. And now we do this, you know, brotherly thing of getting together, a family kind of thing. So I sort of took the narrative and I shifted it to New Year's so that I could have the stronger sort of writing metaphor of the ball dropping in Times Square and, you know, the idea of time passing and everybody tends to do that New Year's, and so it became a little bit more of a universal thing. So that's the Grand Parade of Time ties itself to that.
So what are your thoughts on some of the up-and-coming artists?
I don't listen to a lot of new stuff, generally speaking, but I teach at Humber College, and as a result of that, I'm in a room every Tuesday with, you know, people that are in their 20s. And they have a pretty easy and quick kind of way of kicking my butt, of sort of saying, you know, well, you don't know this. Why don't you know this? You should know this. And so I get exposed to a lot of stuff that way. And it's very wide-ranging, their influences. And the older I get, the more I tend to gravitate towards singer-songwriters more than rock bands. But, you know, I like stuff like Vintage Trouble, you know, like, because it's a throwback in its own way, but it's young guys and they really bring it in a Led Zeppelin-y kind of way, and I like that, you know. So I would mention them by name. I don't know, you know, I mean, my kids, when I say kids, the students at the, they're not kids anymore, but at the college, they I'll go. I'll get a group of, say, four female singers in my class that are really into stuff like Fleet Foxes. And so, okay, we're going to get a whole bunch of that, and their influence is going to be clearly evident in the music that, they're bringing to me as songwriters. So I get exposed to a lot of that, and you go, okay, no, this is kind of cool, this new Americana kind of thing, this folk meets rock, you know. Somebody in the Mumford & Sons, and so I get a whole bunch of that for a while, and I go, okay, I hear it. You know, it's great. It's not really what I'm into. It's not really what I'd put on my, you know, turntable when I get home. Because I tend to, oh, James Taylor's got a new record out. Ooh, I'm going to check that out. Or Pat Metheny's got a new record out. Ooh, I got to check that out, you know. But they're not really new artists in the sense that they have new product. But, you know, my taste tends to be, if somebody said to me, oh, Donald Fagen's got a new thing out, I would go, oh, okay, new Steely Dan, I got to check that out, you know, so... I'm a bit of an old fart, Diane. Sorry.
Do you find social media plays an important part in the music industry today?
Oh, yeah, huge. Yeah, I mean, I was just talking with Don Brightup. He's producing an album for Eleanor McCain called True North, which is the True North Songbook, the Great Canadian Songbook, which is coming out for Canada's 150th birthday. I played guitar and sang on a song called Four Strong Winds. And Don was producing that, but Don also played keys on my thing. And we were talking about how, you know, once you get into the time period of promoting a record, so now you're doing interviews, like, you know, bang, 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 one after the other, all day long, for day after day after day, because we live in a marketing age. This is what it has to be. There's no way around it. The records don't sell themselves. You got to be on social media, and you got to be selling them. And you can't tell the difference anymore between a sort of a mainstream thing. Like, the record company can set me up so that I'm talking to morning radio guys all across the United States. 15-minute windows, bang, 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 you know. But how many records does morning zoo radio of FM radio in the States really sell? You don't really, like, maybe not much. at all, maybe nothing. And then you're doing some sort of an interview with somebody that's just got a little blog thing somewhere, and you've never heard of them. And, but, you know, the record company says, well, no, you should maybe do it because who knows? And you do it. And then that becomes the one where, boom, there's a whole bunch of social media that comes out of that. And you go, huh, you just, you don't know anymore. Like, it's really hard to tell. So you don't, the difference between a sort of a mainstream journalist and somebody that's just kind of making it up in their own bedroom, there's not a lot of difference anymore. And you kind of have to try and make everybody happy. So, which is why my voice sounds so tired. Sorry. Okay.
You refer to yourself as an eclectic chameleon of a player. However, if someone would ask, who is Rick Emmett, what would you say?
I think that Rick Emmett is an eclectic chameleon of a human being, and I think anybody that's an artist would probably agree with that. You know, who's Rick Emmett that, you know, has been married for 40 years and has four grown children and is a grandfather? That's not the same Rick Emmett as the one that straps on a Les Paul and, you know, plays rock gigs. Not the same as the Rick Emmett that goes and plays acoustic gigs. Not the same as the Rick Emmett that, you know, is an artist who, when he's writing and he's deep in the thing of writing, has a lot of self-doubts and doesn't necessarily think that anything he does is any good. But then who's the cocky guy that does interviews and makes jokes and laughs and acts like he's a big rock star? And, you know, did I ever feel like I was a big rock star? Not really. Not my bones. Like, because I didn't get into it because that's what I wanted to be. I didn't have the, whatever the DNA is that makes people be so ambitious because they want to be rich and famous. I never really had that. You know, I wanted to make music, and I wanted to make music so that I would make enough money and have enough fame that somebody would give me a chance to do it again. Like, that was big with me. I wanted to have a self-sustaining kind of career. So that's a real work ethic kind of thing. I think that's a very Canadian kind of thing. So, you know, I would say that humble Canadian thing, I'm pretty much, that's a Rick Emmett for sure, you know. I was a big jock when I was a kid, and, you know, even as an adult, I would go and play men's basketball with the community league every, you know, Tuesday night, and that was big for me for a while there. My knees got so bad I couldn't do it anymore, but Rick Emmett was a guy that liked to play men's basketball on Tuesday nights in a pickup league, you know, which, that's not, you know, that doesn't strike me as being very, you know, rock star ambitious. I think some of the guys that play basketball didn't even know who I was, you know, which suited me fine, you know, so I don't know.
Do you have a song that best represents you?
One single one? No. And I think that, again, this comes back to the eclectic thing. Like, anybody that knows me knows that my catalog is vast. Anybody that knows me knows that I've made way more records out of Triumph than I ever did when I was in it. And so that's a big catalog of stuff. I do think that a vast majority of the public that knows me as a public figure knows that, oh, Rick Emmett's the guy that writes that motivational, inspirational stuff. Hold on to your dreams. Fight the good fight. You know, never surrender. And then, well, Rick Emmett's that guy that writes that stuff that's all about honesty. Lay it on the line and can't lie to myself anymore. And these kinds of songs. So I think that there's probably a through line to those kinds of values and qualities that show up in the stuff. But am I as likely to be sitting down and writing a song like Sweet Tooth? Yes, I am. Like, that's as likely. Ghost of Shadow Town on the new record, it was a song that I was writing contemplating what Donald Trump was doing as a candidate, trying to get power by using fear as a technique, as a weapon, as a thing to make so that our culture would be full of fear. And so that's a pretty dark song. That's a long way. And when we did it, I wanted these searing melody, minor key guitars that spoke of guys that are dead, Gary Moore and Ronnie Montrose, and I wanted that like an homage to ghosts in that song. So it's a long way from songs that are going, "Hey, hold on to your dreams, the magic power of the music." Like, and I'm as likely to do either one, you know. So I think the industry has a way of making shoeboxes for us and saying you got to fit in here. You know, here's a pigeonhole. You got to stay in that, and don't go anywhere else. We don't want to market or promote you outside of that. And I've always fought against that. I never liked it, you know. So, I mean, it's a bit of a drag. Here I am. I'm making a rock record, and I'm talking to people, and I'm promoting a rock record again. And I think people go, "Oh, finally, he's gone back to his shoebox." And I go, "Well, no, don't try to make that happen. That's not me."
So, what's next for Rick Emmett?
I think I'd like to make another record at some point. I'm not in any hurry at this point. I would love it if I didn't have to do as many interviews. I'm getting a little burned out on that, I must admit. And, you know, we're sort of mid-November now. So this time of year for me, I tend to start thinking about my wife's birthday is the 9th of December. So we plan ahead for that in big ways, because she has traditionally wanted that to be a big deal, because she doesn't want Christmas to rob her of, you know what I mean? Like, you know, just because her birthday's in December, that's... So we have that. And then we always have a big Christmas party every year. All our friends, like couples that I've known since high school. So, and we downsized our house last year, and we had our first party in the smaller house that I live in Burlington now. So that's a challenge, because we get anywhere like 50, 60 people in a tiny little house. It's so that'll be a big thing. I'm looking forward to that. And then, of course, Christmas is always a big thing, family thing. So none of this relates to my career, and I don't care. Like... This is a time of year where we start to think about family. Yes?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So where can we find more information on Rick Emmett and Resolution 9?
Well, in all of the old familiar places, rickemmett.com, but you got to spell it right. R-I-K-E-M-M-E-T-T. And you can find it Mascot Label Group, Pro Vogue Records. You can find it on iTunes. You can find me on Instagram, Flickr. I don't even know if that is one of those things. Facebook, there's one. I don't do this stuff. Someone does it for me, but I guarantee you can find me on there.
Just so. Google your name and there it is.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Rick, for being my guest and wishing you continued success.
Thank you, Diane.
But before we go, can you please introduce one more song from Resolution 9? How about End of the Line?
This is Rick Emmett from Triumph and from the new Resolution 9. And we're going to play End of the Line for you, which is the big epic track on Beach Corner on Beach Booster Radio.
You're listening to Beach Corner on BeachBoosterRadio.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this song.
Sweet spot!
Well, this is a wrap for me. I would like to thank Rick Emmett for being my guest and wishing him and Resolution 9 all the best of success with their new album, Res 9, an upcoming concert on November the 26th at 8 p.m. at Living Arts Center in Mississauga. For more information and to purchase the album, visit rickemmett.com. Special thanks to Rick Wharton and Gil Moore at Metalworks Studios for making this interview possible. With Beach Corner on Beach Booster Radio, I'm Dinah Chicky. Beach Corner now available on podcasts with a new weekly show anytime from our new Beach Booster Radio podcast page. Simply click the podcast button from our homepage to enjoy our unique and local programming. Beach Corner is a regular feature in Beach Booster publication. If you would like to be featured on Beach Corner, please contact Diana at beachbooster.com. I welcome your visit to my Facebook and Twitter pages. Bye-bye, everyone.
The preceding program is a production of Beach Booster Radio, written, recorded, and produced in Wasaga Beach, Ontario. We thank you for listening to Beach Booster Radio, Wasaga Beach's only locally owned and operated radio station. We are local. We are Wasaga Beach. We are Beach Booster.
Hi, this is Brian Smith, Mayor of the Town of Wasaga Beach, and you're listening to Beach Booster Radio.